Okay, we're going to start up.
Hi, Mary, and I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey.
And I just wanted to start with chapter 5 on how it works. And it starts by saying, you know, rarely, and we read this at the beginning of every meeting, and so many times it's just, oh, okay, this is a filler in the meetings, you know.
Yes.
It's like, oh my God, they're going to read it again. And the reality is, how does it work? Well, how does it work? Well, this is how it works. You know, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And what I've been told is that, you know, if Bill was to change one word there, is never have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And the other piece is, rarely have we seen a person thoroughly followed our path, you know. And those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And there are such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. And what does that honesty look like for me, you know, when I'm honest, when I take, you know, this has really been on my heart today. You know, I'm 57 years old, and my body doesn't look the way I want it to look. The wrinkles are popping out of my face. The way I can, you know, and this is just, you know, I heard this thing. I was watching this movie last night, and it was about, you know, God giving someone a heart of, not a heart of stone, but a heart of the flesh. And I just really want to incorporate that prayer into my own life, is that God would keep my heart a heart of flesh so that it can receive whatever teachings, whatever I need. And in my own soul, the way I can look for validation in myself is, you know, like us women, we can, you know, compare ourselves to other people, but or whatever, or I can go, God, I'm not what I was when I was 30. Thank God I'm not what I was when I was 30. You know, but the reality is I can't look in the mirror for my validation. I need to hold up the mirror to my soul as a reflection of how I'm doing. I need to get on a scale, and the answer I get from a scale is to weigh, where is my soul at? I hope that makes sense to you, but that's just like really so strong in my heart today, that I don't want to look at things in the natural how I'm doing. I want to look at things in the spirit of how I'm doing. What does my soul look like today? What areas do I need to look at in my life? And so that to me is the word honesty. You know, I was a girl who wore many masks in my life. I would become what you wanted me to be. I would become anything that anybody wanted me to be, just for validations. It's like, okay, I'm in a room of, you know, fancy together people, and I'm going to act like I'm fancy and together. Or I could be hurting and dying in the rooms, and I want you to think that I'm doing okay. And call my sponsor for, oh, I was just checking in, you know, those kind of things. You know, I'm, you know, super spiritual Marian today, and I'm just doing fine, when in reality that I could be falling apart on the inside. So I want my heart to be, you know, pliable and flexible to whatever God's working out in my life. And I want my life to be a reflection of what God is doing in and through me today, not outside circumstance, to become what you want me to be, to get that right number on the scale, to be okay, to, you know, pass by the mirror one time and go, oh, wow, that looks pretty good today. And then the next 2 minutes later, I can pass by the mirror and notice that my arms are flabby, or I got a wrinkle on my forehead, or whatever that is. But my life to be a reflection of what's going on the inside. Because, I mean, that's where honesty is. A manner of living that demands rigorous honesty. Because what I can do is I can lie to the outside world of how I'm doing, but the true work is what's going on inside of me. So, a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty, demands it of me and of myself. You know, I'm a firm believer, you know, I hated everything in and through and about me when I came into the rooms, and my lifetime work is to, it's not about, oh, now I can arrive at feeling good about marrying. It's what I'm doing on the outside to help somebody else that I get any esteem, you know, like any esteem. Like in our St. Francis prayer that talks about, you know, to love rather than to be loved, to forgive rather than to be forgiven, to understand than to be understood. Those are the things that are esteem me today. And all the things that I used to think in my life and even tend to, can think of myself today that, oh man, I said the right spiritual words, you know. And, you know, like I say to him during the break, it's just part of my, you know, fellow, did I really suck, you know, whatever, you know, those ways we can just, I don't know, that we can just self-sabotage, and it's just ridiculous.
It all comes from the mind, too.
Exactly.
Self-will comes from the mind, all the resentments come from the mind, the fear comes from the mind, and so that's the part of it that creates it, so I don't go there to solve it.
Mm-mm.
I need to go to spirit.
And I was just talking to a girl about that on the break, you know, some of those things, those ideas that we can, I don't know where she is, I'm not going to point her out, but, you know, those things, those ideas that we can come up with on our own, like, oh, I think this is a great idea. Well, the same mind that came up with a destructive idea or the whatever, we might want to run it by somewhere else. The same place that causes the problem is probably not going to come up with the solution. But how many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest? Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. If you decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So this is becomes our any lengths. At some of these we balked. You know, we thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. And I was always looking for the easier, softer way in my life, always. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Trying to hold on to my own ideas, and the result was nil until I let go absolutely. Holding on to my old belief systems, holding on to my self-will, and what I was willing to do to walk in the sunlight of the Spirit. This is one of my own things that I think of is that, you know, remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it's too much for us. But there's one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And I just think it's so cool that before we even go into the steps, it's talking about God. We always say, oh yeah, we're going to get down to step 3 and that's where we're going to find God. But it's telling us, you know, half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point and we asked his protection and care with complete abandon before we even start this work. And then here are the steps we took, which I suggested as a program of recovery.
If spirituality doesn't touch, all of our life, it touches none of our life. And we're about to make a commitment to a spiritual walk. And there's a book I've been working with forever, which is has something in the introduction, and it says this. State of enlightenment. Enlightenment simply is experiencing oneness with God. To report things as they are, to see truth. A state of enlightenment is attainable here and now. It is possible to live free of suffering, free of anxiety and neurosis. To do this, we have come to understand our role as the creator of our pain. Our own mind causes our problems, not other people, not the world out there. It is our own mind with its nearly constant stream of thoughts, thinking about the past, resentments, worrying about the future, fear, because that's the only place fear can live is in the future. We make the great mistake of identifying with our mind, meaning whatever my mind says, that's who I am. I am my money, I am my car, I am my relationship, I am the AA guru, I am the relapser. We identify with that. And the sense of who we are doesn't come from mind or thought, it only comes from spirit, but we always have it backwards. We make the great mistake of identifying with our mind. thinking that's who we are, when in fact we are far greater things. We don't need a PhD to get enlightened. What I need is willingness. I had something here, and I lost it, about how many times Bill... Carl Jung tells Roland Hazard, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. Page 27 says, ideas, attitudes, and emotions, which the guiding force of the lives of these men, all coming from the mind. Book says the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than the body. And over and over and over again, you will see how the book points to the mind as the troublemaker. And yet I rely on my mind to solve my problems. That's the part of me that's creating it, so I don't go there to solve it. And I'm about to step onto a path to solve my problem that I never did before. So step three is positioning us to get us ready to turn everything who we think we are over to a God that we may not even know yet. So here's my any lens right now. I had to be convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success, step one. Based on everything I've come up with and how to navigate through life with or without a drink, usually with the drink, it never worked out good, and I hurt other people. Even without a drink, I don't do well without a spiritual path. It's life on self-will, and a book says can hardly be a success. Am I convinced of that? They tell us that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. But when we look in the program, they will mention the word requirements a few times. So the things I need to do right now in step three, am I willing to turn everything I know about my life, my thinking and my actions, over to God? And if I'm not willing to do that, if I'm balking, what I have is a step one problem. Because I still think I could run the show in certain areas. If spirituality doesn't touch every area of my life, it touches none of my life. And we really can't even define spirituality. I mean, it's one thing for you, another thing for you, another thing for me, another thing for Marion. We have some similarities in that. But we really cannot define spirituality. We can't define the spiritual walk. We can see it. In fact, if I make an attempt to define or comprehend God or spirituality, as another book says, I misunderstood the question, because you can't do it, but we can experience it. If we wrote down on a piece of paper what we think God is, we would have a lot of similarities, and then we would probably have some differences. But if we all came up with the most profound examples, definitions of what God is, if we were... studied about God, and we put it all together, it really, if you think about it, amounts to a grain of sand on a beach, because you can't. So what our book is asking us to do is do this walk to be rid of self and experience this power. So we go to page 58, and it says how it works. And I've been to many meetings where you hear people say, I don't know how it works, but I know it does. And I just want to scream out, go to page 58 where it says how it works. And how what works, what's the it? How this process works, how this God works, how this program works, how these directions are about to work for us, how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail at God consciousness, at sobriety. Who has followed this path? What path? Decision 3 and 4 through 9. When we go over to the ABCs, I think this is where you were going to go. If I'm cutting you off, I apologize.
No, you're good.
Okay. The ABC says, we were alcoholic and cannot manage our own life. That's drunk or sober. That no human power could relieve me of my alcoholism. That's drunk or sober. And that God could and would if he was sought. Am I seeking? The ego doesn't want to be entertained that my life has been a failure up until now. And quite frankly, whether you're a PhD, you run a successful company, if I landed in the rooms of a 12-step fellowship, I've blown it. I get an F on my report card. Even if I have a huge bank account and a Rolls Royce outside, if I'm sitting in a meeting, it's because I blew it at some point. And even if I made those riches while I'm sober, I will lose them as quick as I pick up a drink. So based on everything I've come up with, I get an F on my report card, so I'm never in the business of managing my life, although the ego wants to. And no human power or thing can relieve me of alcoholism. But God could and would if he was sort of my convinced of that stuff. Because it says, if I'm convinced of this, move forward. If I'm not convinced, don't move forward. How many of us, I was one of them, came into the rooms, you know, bouncing in and out with the if-only story. A friend of mine would always talk about the if-only story. If only I grew up in Atlanta rather than New York. If only I was white instead of black. If only I was black instead of white. If only I was rich. If only I was poor. If only I was good-looking. If only, right? And the guy or the woman across the room is saying the same thing. If only I was this way, I wouldn't be the way I am. My thing was, if only mom was an alcoholic and dad wasn't the type of man he was, my life would be great. And yet I go into a room who you hear a guy share, and his family was basically like a Hallmark card, and he still can't stop smoking crack or shooting dope or drinking. Same thing. Alcoholism is alcoholism. It really doesn't care where you come from. And it has no mercy on us. So we're about to get past this. Not get above our, rise above our addiction, but get past it. It starts with a decision to turn everything who I think I am over to this power called God and unhook the shackles that were put around my wrists. What I tend to do is self-domesticate, as this author talks about, where I put myself in a cage. In the cage are all my belief systems about life. Everything I think I know about God. Everything about everything is the cage. And I put myself in this cage. I have the key. And I toss it across the room. And I start rattling the cage to get me out. And here I am. Maybe I'm what did I just turn? I'm 58. I forget my age. I'm really 35, but I say 58. And I could be walking around with belief systems that were given to me by my mom and dad when I was a toddler, when I was an adolescent, on what I should and shouldn't do with my life. And here I am in an adult body, still walking around like a little kid. Well, mom won't approve, dad won't approve. I'm worried what people think of me. And that's just more bondage. And there's no need to live that way. And here comes my self-reliance and my lack of godliness in me, because if I do cut bait with those belief systems, I get tight because I'm afraid of what the outcome's going to be. Well, if I don't do what they say, oh my God, well, where is God? So I'm still running the show all the time. The great thing about having a relationship with God is not that we're going to be perfect. God knows that. He created us. But I've gone back to Him, the manufacturer, and I can live life free. Free, basically, of me. I don't need to be free of you. Drugs and booze are going to be there till the end of time. But I'm free of me, who gets me attracted to your opinion of me and drink and drug and a million other things. What great freedom. It's wonderful to get approval. Who doesn't want to hear I love you? But when I get attached to needing that to survive, I'm in serious trouble. I'm back in the cage again. That's why many of us, you ever do this? Stay in a really bad relationship because it's better than no relationship. At least it's something. Everyone just went like this. I'm hip. Because it's something. The fear of, oh my God, I'm going to be alone. And when we do our inventory work over and over and over again, one of the clear threads that are going to show up is the fear of being alone. Because when we believe we're going to be alone, what's synonymous with that is this: oh my God, I'm going to die. So I'll hang out with anyone. I'll be attracted to the sickest of the sick because it's something. By the way, sick people find sick people very attractive. I'll only get away with my nonsense with someone who's sick and suffering. You know, I watch these guys where I am in South Florida. It's loaded. You throw a rock, you hit 45 treatment centers and 100 halfway houses. And I watch these guys roll up on the new women in the group. He's got 50 days, she's got 15 minutes. And he's got his whole thing going on. He's got saggies down to his knees. He's got 3,000 earrings in his ear. He hasn't had a job in 10 years. Mommy's sending him money for cigarettes. and he rolls up on her like he's Snoop Dogg. Right? And he's a player. I tell those guys, try that with someone who's got 27 years. She won't give you the right time of day. But little Mary, with 15 minutes, that's all she knows. It's going to work. She's going to roll right over. And vice versa, by the way. So sick attracts sick, and blind leads the blind. Scripture says we're both going in a ditch. So the thing I need to do, what step three is asking me to do, it doesn't tell us this, but what we're looking to do here is completely lose our life. Scripture says if I find my life, I will lose it. But if I lose it for his sake, I will find it. This is what step three is asking me to do right now. Lose your life as you know it and give it back to me. God, I'm giving you my life with the hope that you give me a life. So, the first requirement is that we be convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Step one. What did that look like? On that basis, I'm always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. Now, my motives come from a mind, and my mind is the discerning instrument. This is a good motive, Pete. Go do it. Sponsor her with one day back. Good motive. An alcoholic with an addict with a motive needs to be considered armed and dangerous. So if you have a motive, dump it. None of us, and I'll speak for myself, I don't have a good motive because I'm not a nice guy. We think we're just wonderful, loving people. Someone's dropped us on our head. We're not really that nice. If you're on a run and I'm on a run, there's a bag of dope between us, I'm killing you. If there's one drink, if there's a half a pint left and we're on the barrel together, that's mine, even though you bought it. But you're my buddy, and I love you, but it's survival. It's mine. On page 62, this is me, this is us. Selfish and self-centered. Big exclamation. So he's making a point. I'm selfish and self-centered. Self-seeking, self-absorbed. It's all about me. This is how I operate. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me? That we think is the root of our troubles. The roots are underground. You can't see them. So we may front really well, have that nice swag going on, but underneath, I got roots that are rotted. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. I step on the toes of my fellows. They retaliate. And I kick back and say, what was that about? What did I ever do to them? I've been gossiping about you for years. And you finally snub me. And I start gossiping more about what a terrible person you are. And it isn't until I do inventory that I get to see truth of what I've been doing, how I've been playing God. Step three is telling me get out of God's throne. You know what every alcoholic and addict does? What happens to every addict and alcoholic when we get to heaven? What God, the first words God tells people like us? That's my chair you're sitting in. Because when I cross the pearly gates, I sit in his throne saying, I'm God. And God's got to remind me, that's not your chair. How often am I playing God? Anytime I tell you what to do, am I playing God or am I really caring, concerning? I'll suggest what you should do based on the fact that I've done it. But I can sit back and say, you need to do this, and you need to do that, and you need to do this, when I'm not doing any of that stuff. Do you ever go to a meeting and the speaker, God forbid, they don't talk about the big book at your meeting. Start the fire now. And we go outside, I can't believe they didn't talk about the big book. I'm playing God. How do I know what they were supposed to say? Maybe Joe was in the back, needed to hear that message. So it's little subtle ways I play God, which means the ego is still breathing. Because I'm better than everyone else. It says, so our troubles we think are basically of our own making. God's about to transform me, to train and transform me. God's here to seek and to save, and I need to surrender to that. But troubles of my own making, what my book just told me, that this unmanageability is an internal condition, has nothing to do with what's going on outside. I need to change my thinking and my actions. I need to turn that all over to God. So in the bottom of page 62, it says, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we ought to quit playing God. Why? Because it didn't work. God's the director. He's the principal. We're his agent. The agent represents the principal. We're here to represent God. How are we doing with that? He's the father. We're his children. God doesn't have stepchildren. What does a parent do for their kids? Give them everything they need, not necessarily everything we want. Yes? Mm-hmm. It says, most good ideas are simple, and this concept or idea was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch to which we pass, to freedom. When I took this position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I had a new boss. Being all powerful, God is going to provide me with what I need if I keep close to him and perform his work well. Established on this footing, now watch this, I became less and less interested in me. Page 62 is all about me. And it says more and more about what I can contribute to life. That's the shift. Bottom of 62, top of 63 is my third step consideration. The prayer is an affirmation to go along with this. And if I never saw this prayer before, because the book says the wording was, of course, quite optional, but I made a sincere plea, the intent was pure, to turn who I think I am over to a loving Creator, that would suffice just as much as me reciting this beautiful prayer. What my sponsor had me do is write out the prayer word for word, and then write it out in my own words, so then when I said it, it had some depth and weight. It spoke my language, if you will. So I do a third step prayer on my knees with my sponsor or the men I sponsor now. And when we get up off our knees, they're given instructions for step four. On page 64, it says, though my decision, step three, was vital, life-giving and crucial, extremely important, it could have little permanent effect. My decision is going to have little permanent effect unless at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in me which are blocking me from God, step four. So how I carry out this decision, part of how I carry out this decision is after step three, making a decision, is immediately put pen to paper and begin inventory, because it's only God who's going to write that inventory. He's pushing the pen. He's giving me inspiration. He's allowing me to recall certain things. He's allowing me to navigate through all this huge body of work. And even if you have five names on your inventory, five names, a handful of resentments, and three more columns. This is a lot of work. Then fear, then sex. It's a huge chunk of work. And only God is going to give people like us the endurance, who were so hell-bent on quick fixes our whole life, the endurance to go through that. Even if you write a fourth step overnight, it's still overnight. And maybe I'll see some of the benefit, because they talk about how we're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle and have peace and goodwill toward all, even our enemies. There's a little bit of a shift. But it's not necessarily immediate gratification when you're doing inventory. In fact, for me, I'm writing inventory and go, oh my God, this is a lot of work. And I what is going on here? I'm seeing me over and over again screwing things up. That's good. My fourth column. But I haven't really seen it come to fruition yet. I might see it in five, I might see it in six and seven, I might see it in nine, but by the time I get to 10, it'll happen. So this is the chopping wood and carrying water. There's no applause for this. You're on your own in the spiritual bunker writing. Mm-hmm. And most folks don't even care, except your sponsor. We're not going to erect the monument outside because John and Mary completed their fourth step. But God knows, and he's the one feeding you, and the pen becomes a spiritual translator. So we do our third step, and we do that step and move four through nine. But how does this work meet me when I'm completed my amends and I'm doing 10, 11, and 12? Do I still have a third step in my life? Absolutely. It isn't what they're talking about here in decision and into inventory. When I'm navigating through my day and I'm surrendering to God, Father, please show me the way through this. Please give me courage to move through this. Thank you for the endurance to keep me at this. I'm surrendering stuff. I'm turning this particular situation over to God. The difference is I have a sponsor in inventory, and there has now become a belief in my life that God will fix it according to his plan. Because most of my prayers end with your will, not mine, be done. I've been made awake enough to know my will's got to stay out of the equation, even though my mind wants it right in the middle of it. I know better than God. And so I always surrender with your will, not mine, be done. And then we move into inventory. It was one other thing, unless you want to...
Talk a little bit about going back as we lead into step three here, too. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. The alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. And earlier it talks about, you know, we're the actor who's trying to run the whole show, and that was me in my life, you know. When he went back to the ABCs, A, that we were alcoholic, could not manage our own life, B, that probably no human power, drunk or sober, and C, that God couldn't, what if he were sought? I was always looking for ease and comfort in my life, no matter what, whether it was in a drink or a drug, or whether it was you guys doing, my family doing, people around me doing what I wanted them to do. And what my sponsor showed me is that if they did better, I did better. So it was still a self-seeking motive, because if you're doing okay, then I can be okay. My plan is going off as designed. And at the beginning of, you know, the acceptance prayer on 517, now you find it, it's like, when I'm disturbed is when some people, some place, something, some situation in my life is not to my liking, and I walked around in my life like that. So I needed a new employer. And when we live like that, when we live in that place of, you know, in the book where it says we are sure that we are to be happy, joyous, and free, like, we really can't be happy, joyous, and free, because it's, you know, the ways that we, what makes me disturbed is when I think I know what's better for somebody else. And when I think I know what's better for me, and it's like, God, whoo, you know, it's like Peter talks about wearing the world like a loose garment. You know, we are sure that God would have us to be happy, joyous, and free. What a way to live. I mean, that's kind of cool, isn't it? It's kind of like kumbaya. And I love thinking of that. There's third step promises. There are promises here to our third step that say, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, what? Peace of mind? That's huge for an alcoholic like me, an addict like me. As we discovered we could face life successfully. Face life successfully. What? As we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. I mean, those are some pretty beautiful things for alcoholic and addicts like us, right?
There's something here in another book in scripture that says this. My sponsor gave me this assignment. It's really wonderful. And it reads this. Deliver me, O Lord, from evil men. Preserve me from violent men who plan evil things in their hearts. They continually gather together for war. They sharpen their tongues like a serpent. The poison of asps is under their lips. Keep me, O Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from violent men who have proposed to make my steps stumble. The proud have hidden a snare for me and cords. They spread a net by the wayside. They have set traps for me. Now, this is referring to something else. My sponsor says, how does this apply to you? Have I not been that person doing just that to anyone who disagrees with me, including our loved ones?
Yeah.
Have I not sat drunk or sober, steaming with jealousy because of someone's success, and secretly hoping they fall just a little, not too much, and hopefully I rise up. Even more than that, this was the thing he hit me with, have I not done this to me? Sabotage my life, sabotage the relationship, sabotage my recovery. I'll never amount to anything. I can't get that job. That's for smarter people. I can't, never will, can't happen. It only happens to other people. I'm setting a trap for me because of this wonderful predator called the mind has set it up. I will never get sober. I'll never amount to anything. I can't get that job. I won't ever make money. I'm just stuck at this job. I wish I can get a new job and switch careers, but I'm me. And I'm the one creating all of this. And the language that we talk to ourselves about, there's a book called The Four Agreements, talks about being impeccable with our words. How do we speak not only about other people up in here? Because on the outside he says, you're a wonderful person, nice meeting you. On the inside, I'm going, I hate them, I can't stand them. But what about the language that we use towards ourselves? It's one thing goofing on yourself and not taking ourselves too seriously. That's actually therapeutic. But I'm talking about dragging ourselves over hot coals because I forgot something. Forgot to say thank you. I completely forgot. Forgot to call you back. Or whatever it might be. And isn't that another form of ego? That my screw up is going to impact the entire universe and wreck your life. But what we do to ourselves is without mercy. And that's how this piece applies. One of the things we got to get away from, because I'm assuming we're doing step three and we're clean and sober, doesn't mean we're much better. I still got the mind running. And it says I need to be convinced that self manifested in various ways, which was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestation, resentments, the number one offender. So I need to be convinced that me, run on self, who can I be a success? I've got all these roles. That convincing, by the way, doesn't come from the mind. The mind wavers. Today I'm spiritual. Tomorrow, to hell with spirituality. I want to be a player. Today I'm going to give my life to a life of poverty. I'm going to be the new St. Francis. And an hour from now, I'm playing lottery tickets. So the mind flip-flops like that. That convinced that my life run on self-will comes from spirit. The spirit is speaking to me. And for the first time, I'm beginning to listen to it. Back to step one. Yep, there it is in black and white. This is me on paper. This is what I do to my life, how I infect your life. This doesn't work. The ego still finds it very attractive. But the spirit is a lot stronger. I'm bringing death to self-will and life of the spirit. And it's starting to talk. Now I can't get away from God saying, keep writing, keep writing, keep writing. You're selfish. Okay, this is not hurting us. When I admit I'm selfish and self-centered, it isn't like I'm dragging myself up a coals right now. I'm finally living in truth. And once I identify I'm selfish and self-centered, I can be selfless and God-centered. But until that, I'm deaf, dumb, and blind to all of this. Make sense? So what I do, we hit inventory. Resentment, fear, sex. Principles, institutions. Resentment, number one, offender. It destroys more alkies than anything else. They don't say to drink or drug will. They say resentment will because it's going to block me from God. And once I'm blocked from God, I'm running the show and I get drunk. Mm-hmm. And with me, to drink is to die. So what I had to do was, I had to write on the top. My sponsor gave me a little spiritual tool. Not in the big book, just a spiritual tool. I had to write across the top of the page this. Thank you, God, for allowing me to be searching, fearless, and moral. That was my prayer. I had to get centered with that and be still. Then pick up the pen and write. Do the lay side prayer. Pick up the pen and write. Mm-hmm. Because what I tried doing the first time through inventory was just pick up a pen and start writing. I get tired after 15 minutes. Not that important. No one's getting sex inventory from me. And then I started to have days of not writing. And I just put a couple of things down to check in with my inventory. It wasn't searching, fearless, or moral. It was me who was writing it. I went to my sponsor. I'll clean up the language. He says, you need to go to God, and he gave me that assignment. Thank you, God, for allowing me to be searching for you some more and pray. And then I began to write. And when you're writing inventory, the pen becomes a spiritual translator. Stuff is flying off the pen that you weren't even aware of. But we started with the master list. So on a sheet of paper, I wrote names. Mom, dad, brother, sister, and so on and so forth. The last two names when I was done was me and God. I had my master list, and I wrote principles, ideas. Children should be seen and not heard. One of the belief systems I grew up with, woman's place was in the home. That was so strong, by the way. My first girlfriend went on to New York University. She's worth about $80 billion today. Went off to New York University. And on that belief system, a woman's place is in the home, when she said, I'm going to college, I says, college? What kind of woman are you? What's wrong with you? Women don't go to college. I'm 17 years old, thinking like this. You could understand why I had a problem in personal relationships with women. But that's what I grew up with. So that went on my inventory. Woman's place is in the home. That's what I began to become resentful with that. So I wrote it down. Do the right thing. You know, don't drink and go to meetings. Put the plug in the jug. All these ideas went on paper. Institutions, the medical community, the religious community, our government. I grew up watching Vietnam War on TV and how these men were treated when they came home and how shabbily they were treated. I had relatives who were in Vietnam. One came, he walked in a walkie. He was involved in an ambush. No help. I had contempt for my government, and I don't want to break a tradition here, but that went on there. I had resentments towards radical groups. I don't care who they were. And all of this, I didn't realize, was all the poison sitting in my soul. Gangsters, they went on there. I don't like that. You know, people who harm children, I don't like them. They all went on my inventory. And just with the master list, guys, I remember looking at it going, oh my God, this is the stuff that's been sitting here marinating for years. How could I possibly have any kind of a relationship with anyone when I'm seeing the world through all of this stuff? So when they told me at the beginning, I have no business getting into a relationship when I'm new, except maybe with the goldfish, I could see why. And I see new people jumping in and out of beds and getting into relationships with no spiritual muscles, and they wonder why they keep landing in a detox and just can't get it. And no business getting into a relationship. So I took the first name, resentment, cause, effects, where am I fall? First name, Mom, all the reasons why. Next name, Dad, all the reasons why I was angry with him. My brothers and so on completed the first two columns. Third column, seven areas of self, pride, personal relationship, self-esteem, security, ambition, pocketbook, sex, relations. When I play out every one of those areas in the third column, it comes down to, oh my God, I'm going to die. When those are hurt, interfered, or threatened. Pride, no one should see me this way. No one should know my mom was a dopamine and an alcoholic. No one should know my mom had nervous breakdowns. No one should know my mom was put in a straitjacket. No one should know my mom, although she was a wonderful woman, failed pretty much at mothering her children. You know why? Because you'll think less of me. If you think less of me, you won't like me. If you don't like me, you won't hang out. If you don't hang out with me, I'm going to be alone. I'm abandoned. Oh my God, I'm going to die. Over and over and over again. My personal relationships, how this relationship should look. Mom and I should have been, you know, homemaker, apple pie, everything pure, Mother Teresa, nurturing, and that wasn't there, hurt, interfered, or threatened. She commits suicide, which means now I'm alone. You think less of me because our personal relationship is hurt, interfered, or threatened, because you're the guy whose mom offed herself. So I got, she's gone, now you're moving further away from me. I'm not hanging out with him, he comes from a crazy family. I'm alone, I'm abandoned, oh my God, I'm going to die. On and on and on. I look at security, emotional security. This is the big bondage piece. What I need from you so I feel okay. Marion talked a whole bunch about that. I need you to do certain things so I feel okay. I was sponsoring, what do we go to, 10 after? Okay. Sponsoring a young guy, and I get him into inventory, and we're doing inventory, and he finds her on campus, AA campus. And I'm discouraging him from going any further till he's somewhat spiritually fit. And he's telling me, you know, she's the most wonderful woman ever to be born on the planet Earth. And he comes to me one day and says, it's not working out. I said, what happened? I think she found someone else. What happened? Well, he tells me, I'm trying to be delicate about this. This is how selfish and self-centered we are, and how we can't see truth, and how we have trouble in personal relationships based on old ideas. He's making love to this woman every night of the week, and one particular night the poor girl was tired and fell asleep, and he didn't get his chance to make love to her. In his alcoholic mind, she found someone else and was leaving him. And his goal was the next day to make sure he bed down with her to convince himself that there was no one else. How's that relationship working out for you? You know, you see that? This is how we operate. Fourth column is rubber hits the road again. Where am I at fault? Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Four questions. And I answer those questions. And I get to see, not my part, because that means you had a part, where I missed the mark, where I'm at fault, where I'm wrong. And our book says that people who've done bad things to us, they acknowledge that. What have I done with that since? Still walking around with hate, still walking around gossiping. They got on with their life. They may have passed on, and I got a ton of plaque on my soul, and I can't get free. And sometimes it just comes down to, as one of our teachers tells us, forgiveness or make amends. And most of these troubles come down to finances and relationships. And we'll take a break. Thanks.